This is Audible.
Preppy. The Life and Death of Samuel Clearwater, Part 1. King Series, Book 5. Written by T.M. Fraser. Narrated by Kirsten Lee and Lance Greenfield at Brickshop Audio, Inc.
Prologue. Present. Preppy. Tiny flashes of dim light spark in the darkened corners of my mind. Slowly, it turns from dusk to dawn, awakening my thoughts as the inner light grows brighter and brighter. I hear a sound, a faucet running, and I realize it's the blood rushing through my ears. When it reaches my heart, I choke as it comes back to life like a bass drum. Boom. Ba-boom, it beats on and on until it falls into a quick yet steady rhythm. The new life inside me grows louder, stronger, until death fades away, and I awake on a gasp. My eyes spring open. I try to take in air, but nothing happens. I try again, and my lungs burn as they finally decide to cooperate. I can breathe, but it hurts like a son of a bitch. I'm fucking alive. My first thought shocked the shit out of me. There of a girl, a sad-looking girl with shiny black hair and huge dark eyes, sitting on the edge of the water tower. My heart falls out of rhythm, beating faster and faster until it's thrumming against my chest like the vibration of a jackhammer. Her. Although my vision is blurry as shit, my thoughts of her are clearer than they'd ever been. And for the first time in my adult life, I'm fucking scared. I don't even need to see the big motherfucker standing over me with a baseball bat to know I am completely and totally fucked. Chapter 1. 3 years earlier. Preppy. Fuck, that's some good shit. I wiped the excess powder from under my nose and rubbed it on my gums. Grade A blow. Thanks, man. This shit day sucks just a little bit less, I said. We'd just pulled up to Grace's house after dropping King off to start serving his sentence. We'd see him again, but not for 2 to 4 years. Fuck, Bear said, echoing my thoughts about the coke as he snorted a line off my dashboard. He pinched the bridge of his nose and shook his head from side to side. His long blonde hair flapped around his face like a wet sheepdog shaking itself dry as the rush from the blow slammed into his brain. I know the feeling. I knew it well. I fucking loved it. Bear wiped any residual evidence of our pity party off the dashboard with his hand. He got out of the car, but I hesitated with my hands on the wheel. I glanced up at Grace's little cottage and sighed. You coming? Bear asked, leaning down in the open window. He lit 2 cigarettes and leaned up against the car, obscuring my view with his jean-covered ass. Reluctantly, I got out, and as I rounded the car, I smoothed down my khakis, straightened my bow tie, and took a deep breath. I joined Bear against the car as we both stood in silence, staring up at Grace's front porch. He handed me one of the lit cigarettes, and I took it, taking a long, deep drag. You pissed he told us not to visit? I asked. Bear hooked a thumb into his pocket, kicking a loose shell with the tip of his boot. I took another drag and exhaled slowly. Bear shrugged. Some of my brothers, when they get locked up, they say the same thing. No visits, no calls. When they're on the inside, they have to concentrate on life on the inside. Can't imagine it helps to have visitors reminding them all the time of the freedoms they don't fucking have. I wasn't talking about your beach bitches, Care Bear. I was talking about King, I said, stubbing out my cigarette under my shoe. Bear rolled his eyes and flicked his cigarette into the road, blowing the smoke out of his nostrils. Come on, let's get this over with. Bear? I asked, feeling suddenly uneasy as we made our way up the front walkway. Tapping my fingers on the front of my pants, I straightened my bow tie again. Yeah, Prep? I followed him onto the porch and lowered my voice to a whisper. I think weed would have been a much better idea than blow. Bear turned around, his pupils the size of pancakes. He pointed to my eyes. Yeah, man, he agreed as we both broke out into a fit of laughter. I think you might be fucking right. The way I see it, there is only one fucking solution to this problem of ours, I announced, glancing between Grace and Bear, and the depressing as all fuck looks on their faces. They both stared down at the table as if it were going to magically offer up the answer we were all looking for. Grace's eyebrows were knitted tightly into a downward point, causing more wrinkles to form on her already heavily lined face as she circled the rim of her glass with her spoon over and over again. It killed me that I couldn't fix this for her. For us.
Samuel,
Grace said, covering my hand with hers and offering me a small, reassuring smile that was anything but reassuring.
You don't have to fix this right now. You don't have to make it better. We will think of something.
Her tone sounded like she was trying to convince herself as much as she was trying to convince me. We were talking about Max, King's baby girl who'd been tossed into the system the second he was put in cuffs. The three of us had been trying everything we could think of to get her out and home with one of us, but the state is fickle as shit. Apparently, they didn't want to give an infant over to a biker, a degenerate, or a sickly elderly woman. Damn the man. Bear's knuckles were white as he flipped the napkin ring from one hand to another, snapping the plastic with a growl. He flung it across the table, shooting Grace an apologetic look before dropping his face into his hands. I slammed my hand down on the table, rattling the pitcher of Grace's famous mojitos, finally drawing their attentions out of their own asses and up to me. All right. It's been decided. I reached out and squeezed Bear's hands like Grace had squeezed mine, and he retracted it like I'd given him a severe case of the cooties. We are just going to have to get gay married.
Shut the fuck up, Prep,
Bear grumbled, stubbing out his cigarette in the ashtray and trying to swipe me across the side of the head, but I was too quick, dodging him before he had a chance to make contact.
Boys,
Grace warned. Although my words seemed to have the effect I was looking for because the corners of her mouth turned upward, her frown straightening into a line. A tiny bit of the light in her eyes returning as she naturally fell into her role in our crazy lives. Her role as our mom.
Bear, at least pretend you care about this shit,
I said, watching Grace out of the corner of my eye as her shoulders relaxed and she settled back into her chair with her drink.
I mean, look at you, motherfucker. For Christ's sake, they aren't going to give us King's baby if my man-husband won't even put on a goddamn shirt.
I pointed to Bear, who hadn't worn a shirt under his cut since the day he turned prospect for the Beach Bastards. Seriously, you'd think the guy was allergic or something.
What are you talking about? I'm totally covered,
Bear said, looking down and adjusting his cut to cover his left nipple, exposing his right one in the process. I rolled my eyes.
Tattoos don't fucking count,
I said, and that's when I heard Grace's small laugh and inwardly my own shoulders fell.
Sure they do,
Bear said, patting the ink on his abs with both hands as if it somehow proved his point.
Samuel, Grace said, sounding a little tired. As much as I appreciate your enthusiasm, we live in the South, dear. They haven't quite embraced the idea of gay marriage here just yet.
I stood from the table and paced up and down the three steps leading from the deck to the yard and back again. Of course I knew that gay marriage wasn't legal in the South. And I knew that the idea was fucking ridiculous, but I was willing to spew just about anything to come up with a solution. Not to mention that someone needed to thin out the thick cloud of dread looming over our little family.
Samuel, we will think of something. It will just take time.
Grace reassured me. I looked down at her and took hold of her outstretched hand. Bending down, I pulled her into a hug and she wrapped her tiny arms around my waist. She smelled like peppermint and the potpourri she always kept out on the table in the living room that I might have mistaken for trail mix once or twice. Or six times.
We've got this, Grace,
Bear said, echoing my thoughts. Although he didn't sound as convinced as I was. I squatted down next to Grace. We will just have to be a little more creative. Grace patted my cheek.
You're a good boy, Samuel,
she said. And if I was a dog, my tail would be wagging so fast it would have fallen right off.
Oh, and before I forget, don't forget to check in on Myrna like I asked.
She's been more off than usual lately, and I want to make sure she's looked after while I'm away.
You got it,
I said, planting one last kiss on her forehead and standing up, straightening the crease in my pants. Myrna's house was one of the first Granny Grow houses in our operation. Plus, she made these amazing chocolate chip cookies that were so fucking good, I've seriously thought about rubbing them all over my nuts. I'm going today, actually, I assured her.
When will you be back? Bear asked.
A few weeks or so, not too long,
Grace answered, with a little too much enthusiasm. Bear and I exchanged a knowing glance above Grace's head. She was heading out of town to some facility she'd talked up to sound like a resort and spa for a few weeks. But Bear and I had our suspicions, so we'd called the place after she'd first spoke about it, and sure enough, it was a medical treatment facility for patients with advanced stages of cancer. Grace rarely said the C word when we were around and vowed that she was going to live forever.
You need a ride up there?
I asked. Grace waved us off.
Boys, stop worrying about me. They are sending transportation for me in the morning. Now go! Go! I'll see you two in a few weeks.
I was the kind of man who packed a gun at all times, but even I wasn't stupid enough to try and argue with Grace when she had her mind set on something. And if she said she was going to live forever, then it was best to believe her and leave it at that. Bear rounded the table and said his goodbyes, and I followed him through the yard around the side of the house.
You still got the number of that place?
Yeah. I called to make sure she's got a private room, I said.
Good.
One of the brothers has a stepsister who works there. She's going to keep an eye on her, Bear said. There wasn't much Bear and I agreed on, but taking care of Grace, even if it was behind her back, was one of those rare things that didn't require an argument or a flip of a middle finger.
Drop me at the club, Bear said. I don't get my bike back from Dunn's until the morning, right before we ride out.
I nodded. While Grace was gone, Bear was going to be out on a ride with the bastards. Something about something and them going somewhere. I didn't really know the details because I never really listened to what he said. And right then, there was something still nagging me about our earlier conversation.
I mean, you really wouldn't get gay married with me to help King's kid?
That's kind of bullshit. I knew it was odd to be offended because my very heterosexual friend wouldn't marry his other very heterosexual friend in a gay wedding to save the kid of their other very heterosexual friend. But there wasn't a fucking thing I wouldn't do to make shit right again. It wasn't the fucking marriage part. It was the thought that Bear might not be in this as much as I was that was making me all twitchy. Some fucking people. With one hand on the front gate of the fence lining Grace's yard, Bear stopped and turned around.
The truth? Ain't nothing I wouldn't do to get King's kid back for him. And stop being such a dick, Preppy, because you fucking know that. Believe it or not, this shit isn't all about you.
I felt better knowing that we were on the same page.
That might be true, but what's also true is that all this sucks major fucking asshole.
That it does, my friend,
Bear agreed, pushing open the gate.
Hey, Bear, you want to know what they call gay marriage in states where it's legal?
I asked as we reached the car.
No, but I have a feeling you're going to tell me anyway,
he said with a laugh, struggling to maintain his semi-permanent state of looking annoyed.
Marriage, you fucking idiot,
I said, flicking him on the back of his head as I jogged over to my car. He shot me a tattooed middle finger.
I came in like a wrecking ball!
I belted out the open window at a bunch of teenagers walking across the causeway. The group of mostly girls scrunched up their noses in confusion, as if they'd never been the victims of a drive-by singing before. Fucking teenagers, I muttered, propping my elbow up on the door and waving my hand through the wind to the beat of the music, continuing my radio duet at a volume not fully appreciated by most, and especially not appreciated by the party pooper next to me who had a pained look on his face as if my singing was causing his dick to tie itself in a knot. We're all feeling shitty about King and Max, Bear, but do you have to look so constipated? I asked, punching him in the shoulder. Bear was silent for a moment. He blew out a breath and scratched the back of his neck.
It's not just King.
It's my old man, too.
He's been all over me lately, even more than usual.
I parked outside of the gate.
Bear looked up to the darkened clubhouse, staring at it like he could see something more than windows and walls.
Fuck your old man, I said.
That motherfucker best never step to me or I'll show him the preppy special.
What exactly is the preppy special? Bear asked. One bushy blonde eyebrow quirked up.
I made the shape of a gun with my thumb and index finger and pointed it up to the clubhouse.
A bullet with a side of bow tie.
I shot my finger gun and made my best exploding gun noise with my mouth.
Bear laughed. Not that fake laugh shit he'd been trying to pass off as the real deal these last few weeks, but a real, live, genuine laugh. Which was a relief to hear, considering the cloud of doom he's been walking around in. Motherfucker could be so serious sometimes. It made my dick hurt.
Bear got out with a goodbye salute and disappeared behind the gate. I headed to Myrna's, feeling more determined than ever to get Max back for King and protect the people I called family. There was nothing I wouldn't do. No one I wouldn't kill. If only it were that fucking easy.
Chapter 2. Dre. I have cum in my hair. Blood caked underneath my fingernails. Bruises between my legs. I was so over being me that I needed a new word for over. I needed a new fucking life. I patted my bra over my shirt, feeling for my bus ticket for the 100th time. I breathed a sigh of relief when the paper crinkled against my skin, my reminder that a fresh start was only a bus ride away. I righted my shirt and took in my surroundings. The small house was once very familiar to me, in what seemed like another lifetime, but in reality was only a few years ago. I used to feel at home there. Oh, how things have changed. I nervously crossed and uncrossed my legs as Myrna shuffled around the kitchen. I felt everything and anything but at home. This had nothing to do with Myrna. I'd always called her by her first name. And everything to do with me. I pulled down on the hem of my shorts, as if I could somehow make them longer, suddenly all too aware of the hole in the pocket exposing the skin on my upper thigh. After uselessly yanking at the worn denim, I switched to my sleeves, stretching the fabric over the palms of my hands and folding my fingers over it to keep it in place. Sunlight beamed through the large window of the living room. The last light of the day rendered the thin material of my shirt completely see-through, and I hoped with everything I had that Myrna wouldn't see my arms. My stomach twisted. The H I'd had over the past week wasn't nearly enough to get me high. Only enough to keep me from plowing headfirst into major withdrawals. My head throbbed and my body ached like I had the flu. The major hangover that never really went away. My stomach could have also been twisting because the second I'd entered my grandmother's house, I'd officially become the worst fucking human being on the planet. Unofficially, I'd already held that title for quite some time. I rocked forward to quell the nausea, but there was little that could help me that didn't come in the form of a syringe, or a less used and abused body. I wondered what was taking Myrna so long, because I wasn't sure how much longer I could sit there without vomiting into the planter next to the front door. Another wave of nausea washed over me, and without thinking, I bit down hard on my bottom lip to keep the contents of my stomach down. I licked the blood from my lip, the taste of copper adding to the already disgusting taste of bile on my tongue. Myrna came back into the living room with a big smile on her face. She set down a silver tray on the coffee table, the one she only used when company came around. My grandmother, seemingly unaware of my discomfort, poured tea into two mismatched cups. One was light blue, with a chip on the rim, and I recognized it immediately. The chip had been a result of me running my big wheel into her coffee table as a kid. I'd sent her entire tea set, a wedding gift from my late grandfather, crashing to the floor. Myrna had sat with me on her lap on the kitchen floor, stroking my hair and comforting me for hours, even though it was me who ruined her entire tea set beyond repair. All had been lost, except for one cup. The one cup I now took from Myrna as she passed it across the coffee table. My hands shook, rattling the teacup against the saucer. I smiled as politely as I could, setting it carefully back on the table without so much as taking a sip. My grandmother returned my smile and watched me curiously over the rim of her teacup. And just like when I'd first knocked on her front door several minutes earlier, I waited. Nothing. The last time I visited, Myrna was having trouble remembering things. Where she'd put the keys, what time her friend Hilda was picking her up for bingo. It seemed things weren't only different for me, but Myrna as well. Because I never expected the woman I spent every summer with during my childhood since I was 4 years old to not recognize her one and only grandchild. When had things gotten so bad? "Do you know who I am?" I asked softly, in one last attempt to stir up some kind of recognition. I stared unblinking at her, and tried to will the recognition into her eyes. Eyes that matched mine. Eyes that used to hold so much life, but were now dulled, like they'd been frosted over. Maybe there wasn't anything wrong at all. Maybe she was totally with it and just didn't recognize me. After all, the last time she saw me, I was all glossy black hair and tan skin, and now I wasn't even a shadow of my former self. Gaunt, with sharp collarbones and pointed elbows, deep, dark, yellowy circles under my eyes, pale grayish skin. I didn't need to look in a mirror to know I wouldn't be able to recognize myself. "I'm Andrea," I said, nothing still. "Dre?" I asked, switching to my nickname, just in case it could ignite a spark. "Oh!" Myrna exclaimed, holding up her index finger. I sat on the edge of the cushion, leaning over the table, waiting for her to confirm that I'd broken through. "You're from the church, right? They keep sending people by to keep me company while Rick's overseas, but I'm just fine. My nurse training keeps me busy, and in my free time, I'm learning how to be a better cook. Although, I need to work on perfecting Mama's meatloaf, or she'll never come over for Sunday dinner." My heart dropped into my stomach when Myrna referred to my grandfather as if he was still alive and overseas fighting in the war. Guilt, sickening guilt, twisting guilt, washed over me and clung to my rotten insides. In the grand scheme of things, it was probably better she didn't know who I was, or why I was there. I was reminded of that reason when a crash sounded from the back of the house. I cringed, while Myrna seemed unaffected by the commotion. She was sipping tea with a polite pinky raised in the air, like the proper southern debutante she once was. Just as I told myself that she hadn't heard the noise, she tilted her head and pointed down the hallway. "How much longer do you think they'll be, dear?" she asked, as I'd been wondering the exact same thing. My pulse spiked. "I don't know what you're... who?" I again pulled down on my sleeves. She smiled and leaned forward, crooking her index finger for me to do the same, so I did. "There are two men in the back room," she whispered. "They broke my window, and they are stealing from me." She slapped her knee, and a burst of laughter shot through her mouth, as if she'd just told me the punchline to a joke. "Can you believe it? Isn't it all so very exciting?" I'll just go tell them to leave for you," I announced, keeping my voice as steady as possible and ignoring the head rush I got when I stood abruptly from the couch. Then, as calmly as I could, made my way down the hallway. "Thank you so much, dear," Myrna called out. "But you don't have to do that. Someone is already on the way. He'll be here shortly."
"Who?"
I asked, turning around.
"Samuel,"
she offered, like it was a name I should know. She picked up her cup and crossed her legs, settling back into the sofa and turning to stare out the front window into the yard, pinky back in the air. I turned and raced down the hall, pushing open the back bedroom door. I almost fell over at the sight before me. What used to be a guest bedroom and doubled as Myrna's scrapbooking room was now filled with rows of green plants. And not just any plants. Weed. Myrna was growing weed out of her guest bedroom. Green leaves jutted out in every direction over a complicated web of clear tubes and glass planters hanging from the ceiling and the walls, creating several aisles of stacked plants. Stumbling around the room, shoving as much of it into garbage bags and sending the glass planters and tubing crashing to the floor as they went, were the two men the bus ticket in my bra was going to get me far, far away from. "What the fuck is all this?" I asked, my mouth gaping as I took it all in. "And why is it here?" Eric and Connor both looked as if they'd won the weed lottery, yellow-toothed grins plastered on their gaunt faces. Eric's ripped t-shirt hung like an old potato sack off of his thin frame. His cheeks were sunken in. His sneakers were mismatched, both in color, one black and one white, and in condition. One had a hole with his toes poking out the top, and the other had the sole coming loose on the side. Connor didn't look any better, although his shoes were the same color. "Tell me what the fuck is going on?" I demanded, wishing that sober didn't feel so goddamn awful.
"You're a dumb bitch, you know that?" Eric snapped. "This," he said, holding up one of the plants, shaking it in the air, "is exactly the reason why we came here. Did you really think we came all the way down to this shit town to lift shitty cheap jewelry from your granny?"
He shook his head in disbelief and continued to fill his bag.
"Dumb fucking bitch," he muttered.
Connor chimed in.
"When we heard what was here, we thought it was just a rumor. But we hit the mother load. You know how much this shit is worth on the street?"
He crossed the room and shoved a bag into my hand. Just him being near me made me more disgusted than any withdrawal ever could.
"Help load this up. That shit you like to shoot up isn't fucking free, you know."
"I know, because I paid the price. No more." "You knew all this was here?" I asked, dropping the bag and taking a step back.
"Fuck yeah, we did,"
Eric said, holding up his hand for Connor to high-five him. Connor shot him the bird instead and continued his destruction of the room, knocking over equipment and pulling tubes from the wall. Water from those tubes sprayed around the room like a sprinkler, soaking everything within, including Connor and Eric, who either didn't notice or didn't care.
"We were watching when your granny opened the door. That bitch has no clue who you fucking are, does she?"
Eric asked.
"Maybe I should go see if she can take a pounding as good as her granddaughter can," he said, grabbing the crotch of his sagging sweatpants.
Connor, someone who used to be the first to come to my defense, was now laughing at my humiliation. At the sick joke Eric had made about something not even remotely fucking funny.
"Who knew that an old lady could do all this?" Connor said, kicking over some sort of machine by the window, splitting it open to reveal its red and blue wiry guts.
Which was when it hit me. Connor was actually right. Myrna couldn't have done all this. Not even at her best. Myrna was the kind of person who refused to take aspirin when she had a headache, so drugs of any kind weren't exactly on her radar. And as far as botanical skills went, hers didn't go any further than the small flower box under the front window.
"Look around, you fucking idiots."
My words came slower than my mouth could move, and with my head throbbing like I'd been clubbed, it was a wonder I could speak at all. "This is high-tech shit. Whoever you're really stealing from, it's not my grandmother. And I'm pretty sure that you've seen enough movies to know that stealing drugs from someone who deals it never ends well. So chances are that they aren't going to forget this. They'll be coming for you. Connor laughed and pointed between the three of us.
Yeah, when he finds out what we did. The three of us. As much as you like to think you're better than us, you're not. This is as much as you as it is us.
He? So you know whose stuff this is? Connor rolled his eyes at me. Eyes that used to contain kindness and sympathy had grown to hold nothing but hatred and contempt.
Stop asking so many fucking questions and help us carry the shit out.
His smirk twisted into a sick, knowing smile.
Or don't. But then I can't promise that we're going to be as gentle with you tonight as we were last night.
I'd never liked guns. Even my dad's hunting gun that he kept on display in his office made me uncomfortable. But then Connor said something that reminded me that if I had a gun, I could never pull the trigger.
Or maybe I'll call Melly and she can ride my cock for a while, Connor said, stepping up into my space, glaring down at me with all the hatred in his soul.
Oh, that's right, I can't. Because she's dead.
The familiar guilt bubbled in my gut and exploding in my heart. The heavy, never-ending, too-much-for-one-soul-to-bear guilt. It was what the bars of my imaginary cell were made out of, the one Connor built around me with his words, the one he just pushed me back inside and slammed the door shut.
I don't mean to interrupt, Myrna sang, coming to stand beside me at the door, her hand on my shoulder. Connor backed down and went back to work, stuffing his bag. But would any of you like some cookies? She asked, holding up a plate of her famous double chocolate chip cookies. Eric and Connor ignored her, continuing to loot the room of its plants and damage and destroy everything else.
I'm so sorry, I said, turning around to Myrna. Without caring if she remembered me or not, I wrapped my arms around her, selfishly needing the comfort of my grandma, the same way I'd needed it when I'd broken her tea set. She gently patted me on the back.
It's all right, dear, she said, pulling back and holding up the plate again. Don't be upset. Whatever's bothering you will be okay. There's always tomorrow, and that's another day.
She took a bite of a cookie and spoke with her mouth full.
My Rick always says that when I'm having a bad day. Here, have a cookie. I just made them. They're Samuel's favorite.
There was that name again. Who's Samuel? I asked, expecting to hear about someone from her past or someone long dead. But then out of the corner of my eye, I noticed that both Connor and Eric had froze. My guess was that they knew who Samuel was, and if I had any money at all, I'd bet that this was his shit.
Where is he now?
Eric asked, the cocky smile nowhere to be seen. Myrna took another bite of her cookie, slowly chewing. A car door slammed. She waited until she was done swallowing to say,
He's here.
Connor and Eric darted through the back door faster than I'd ever seen them move. My first instinct wasn't to run. I didn't want to leave Myrna in her state, and on top of that, I hadn't done any of the actual stealing. Chances were that this Samuel guy wouldn't see it that way. I hesitated only long enough to wrap Myrna in another hug.
Again, I'm so sorry,
I said, placing a kiss on her forehead, before running through the living room and out the back door.
Come on,
Connor called, waving for me from the field behind the house that led to the train tracks. But then I stopped. It could be my only chance, and if I wanted to be on that bus tomorrow, I didn't have a choice. I had to take it. With one last glance at Connor, I shook off the voice of the guilt, the voice that told me I owed him for what I'd done, and I took off in the complete opposite direction, crossing the yard into the woods. I heard him calling my name over and over again as I ran deeper into the trees, down the overgrown footpath. The bark of a nearby tree suddenly exploded. Sharp pieces of bark lodged into my thighs. Warm blood trickled down my calves.
My heart pumped faster and faster. My body, who wanted nothing more than to give up on me, warred with my mind, which was fueled only by adrenaline, keeping me moving, one foot in front of the other. A whistling sounded past my ear. Another tree exploded, this time right in front of me. I stopped and turned around, catching a brief glimpse of the man standing in Myrna's backyard. I started right back again in the other direction. I hadn't been able to see much of the man, but I knew right then what I had seen would be burned into my brain and haunt me forever. A wicked smile, a bow tie, and a gun. Chapter 3. Dre. What the fuck have I done? It was the thought racing through my head, over and over again, as I watched the world go on without me from my perch high up on the water tower. Over the tops of the bending pines, just beyond the leaves, was the small town of Logan's Beach, a place I'd once loved. Despite the way I was circling the drain, and much to my surprise, there were signs of life everywhere. Cars drove up and down the two-lane road below. Lights flickered on and off. The faint smell of barbecue wafted through the air. Echoing bass from music playing somewhere in the distance vibrated off the cold metal platform, thudding softly underneath me in rhythmic succession. The ground below appeared flattened, much like I imagined the earth would look from space. It was all so far, far away. Somewhere down there, eating the food and dancing to that music, were people. Happy people. I remembered the last day I was happy. A slow-running silent movie, except in vivid technicolor. I could recall every single smile, every laugh, every exaggerated hand gesture as stories and jokes were exchanged. It was how it ended that haunted me. A scene that never drifted far from the screen, playing it on a loop over and over again in my nightmares. With the back of a shaky hand, I wiped the tears from my cheek, smudging my heavy black eye makeup across my face. My stomach suddenly retched. However, no amount of purging could expel the kind of decaying impurities keeping me trapped in a life I hated. I breathed in and out slowly, in an attempt to gather my thoughts and quell the nausea. But despite my efforts to hold my shit together, the world spun. A violent pain slashed behind my eyes like someone was trying to hack their way out of my skull. Despite everything, I still wanted it, craving the high that had nothing to do with being up on the water tower. Heroin. I don't remember who got it or when we first decided to try it. I only remember the wave of euphoria that took over that very first time. I was lost, and somewhere along the way, heroin took notice and moved in and took my place. It decided my every move. It was the reason behind my every terrible decision. It didn't just take over my life. It was my life. The more heroin did the thinking for me, the less I had to do for myself. Heroin allowed me a retreat that sobriety couldn't. An oblivion. I'd chosen that oblivion over my friends, my family, college. I scooted to the end of the platform, dangling my feet over the ledge. One of my shoes, cheap flip-flops from a gas station, slipped off my foot. I leaned over the railing to watch as it flitted down to the ground, gaining enough momentum to send a small poof of dirt billowing into the air when it smacked against the earth. A crazed laugh that sounded nothing like me burst from my mouth, echoing across the tops of the pines lining the dirt road beside the tower. I kicked off my other shoe and watched in wonderment as it followed the path of its mate, landing only inches away in another poof of dirt and dust. I wondered what it felt like. To fly? To be a bird above it all? Maybe it would end just like my shoes. Poof. I stood up too quickly, falling back down onto my bony ass. My knees wobbled and gave out. I tried again, this time much slower. Holding on to the railing, I focused my gaze down on my shoes as I lifted one bare foot onto the bottom rung of the rail. The sharp metal cut into the flesh in the crease of my toes. My entire body began to shake, more violently than before, almost as if I was having a seizure. It wasn't just because I was needing a fix. It was my entire being recognizing and realizing what I was about to do. This was it. Bending at the waist, I raised my other foot and was met with the same cut of flesh. I shifted my hands to the top rung and slowly straightened my knees until I was standing upright. The only thing keeping me from falling over the side was the thin guard bar pressed against the middle of my thighs, which bent against my weight. With my hands at my sides, I used my fingers to slowly pull up the hem of my t-shirt until I had enough of the material in my hands to lift it up over my head. Raising it into the night sky, I released my clenched fist and watched as the breeze picked it up and carried it into the pines, and I was glad to see it go. I gave a quick press of my lips to the silver cross Myrna had given me for my first communion and let it fall back between my breasts. I carefully removed my shorts and underwear, lifting one foot at a time, until I was standing bared to the world. Clean. It was the beginning of the end. A baptism into death. I stretched my arms out wide, embracing the night. I was ready to fly. On the count of three. 1, 2, 3. I don't want to do this. But it was too late. It wasn't as if I could jump back and change my mind. I was already falling. Until I wasn't. I was ripped back from the very edge of death by strong arms, and for a naive second, I thought it might have been God himself who'd heard my last-second change of heart and saved my life. A life I'd so stupidly chose to throw away in a moment of delusion and weakness. What the fuck is wrong with me? What am I doing here? I thought, coming back to my senses as my body was thrown sideways, elbows, shoulders, and knees crashed against metal railing, wall, and finally, flesh. My spine arched off the platform like a fallen cat as my tailbone landed unceremoniously with a sickening crunch that made my eyes water. I was pushed onto my back. Powerful thighs straddled me, and again I was stupid enough to think that maybe I was being protected. That thought was short-lived when my wrists were jerked above my head and held at an awkward angle that made my arms throb. After a few excruciating moments, the pain in the base of my spine dulled to an ache, and I was able to open my eyes to the blurry world around me. I blinked rapidly. When my vision cleared, I found myself staring up into the dark amber-colored eyes of a man who most certainly wasn't God. He was older than me, but only by a few years at most. I'd never seen anyone like him. One side of his neck was covered in colorful and intricate tattoos that disappeared into the collar of his yellow button-down shirt. When he adjusted my wrists, his sleeves rode up his forearms, revealing very little unmarked skin there as well. His sandy blonde hair was shaved short on the sides, longer and slicked back on top. His beard was neat, short, and several shades darker than the hair on his head. For a brief moment, I was relieved that whoever the man was, at least he wasn't Connor or Eric. However, that relief soon gave way to unadulterated panic. I didn't recognize him. Not at first, anyway. Not until he smiled, and my gaze traveled from his full lips and straight white teeth down to his pink and yellow polka dot bow tie. Then the recognition slammed into me like a freight train. Oh, fuck. This man was my savior. He was also anything but.
I see you remember me. Well, at least now it all makes a fuck of a lot more sense, he said,
his voice a deep rumble that I felt in my chest as he leaned down over me, his lips a breath away from mine. I tried to struggle, to free myself of his grip, but he only chuckled and held me tighter. He was right by laughing, because my fighting back was exactly that. Laughable. I was weak. Too weak. What exactly makes sense now? I managed to bite out, blowing out a breath of frustration at my lack of ability to fight him off.
It's a common knowledge around here that anyone who steals from me, or my partner, has got to be either dumb as fuck or suicidal,
he said, leaning back onto his knees. Still holding my wrists with one hand, he gestured with the other to the ledge I'd stood on seconds earlier.
The truth is that when I followed you up here, I had my money on dumb as fuck. But hey, you surprised me by trying to take the final leap over there. I didn't expect that. Almost didn't catch you in time.
He then leaned back down and had the audacity to pinch my cheek, the way a crazy aunt would. So what? You only saved me from killing myself so you could have the honor?
Maybe,
he admitted, adding,
You should be proud of yourself, kid, because nothing much surprises me these days. In a way.
He paused and looked around into the night sky, taking a deep breath through his nose, releasing it with an audible sigh out of his mouth, like he was sitting in an open field, relaxing and literally smelling the flowers.
It's kind of refreshing. I hope those other two stupid fucks surprise me like you have, but I doubt it.
He looked back down at me and winked.
My money is staying on dumb as fuck when it comes to those two.
What did you do to Myrna? I asked, my words as shaky as the rest of my body.
Is that a new thing? Is that what the kids are all doing these days? Ripping people off, then pretending like they give two fucks what happens to them?
Please, tell me. Is she okay? He chuckled, like the panic in my voice was amusing to him. He leaned down, his cheek firmly against mine.
I'm not telling you shit,
he said, squeezing my body hard between his thighs, as if to prove to me that it was all it would take to crush me. That's when I saw it. That thing I'd never forget that made the hair on my arms stand on end and my mouth open with a gasp. Whenever I thought of someone who was scary, I thought of men from movies or books. The overly muscled type with no necks, wearing black clothes with scowls on their faces. Someone like a security guard, or bouncer, or biker, who could warn people away with their large statures and brooding silence. Someone you wouldn't want to cross in a dark alley, never mind a lit street. The man on top of me could never be described that way. He was far from a brute with his lean build, and his clothes consisted of pastels and suspenders, not exactly big scary man attire. In essence, he looked as if he'd stepped out of a page from The Notebook. Upon first glance, the guy was about as scary as the Easter Bunny. Until I saw it. It was a spark, just a glint of depravity lurking behind his amber eyes. I saw it in the way he smiled as he held me down. I heard it in the way he told me I was dumb as fuck and adorable in the same breath. And when he spoke about his plans for revenge, I felt it in my soul. It was then I knew he was capable of things I couldn't even fathom. Where Connor and Eric were bad guys in an obvious way, they didn't instill in me the same kind of fear this man did. I'd thought I'd known true fear when I'd stood on the ledge and decided to recklessly end it all, but I hadn't. I hadn't even known it when Connor and Eric had beat me, brutalized me, and then took turns forcing themselves on me. Into me. No. I never knew true fear until I met pure evil. He wore a smile and a bow tie.
Chapter 4. Preppy. The night had taken a turn for the worse when I showed up to Myrna's house on the tail end of being robbed of my fucking plants. However, I was now straddling a naked chick on top of the water tower, which was one of my favorite places in Logan's Beach. Shit was looking up, although when I followed her up to the tower, I hadn't known she was planning to defile my sacred space by tossing her bony body off of it. There was something about her, something almost familiar, although I knew I hadn't met her before. I watched as she stood stark naked, with her face tilted toward the sky and her arms out like she was the king of the world on the front of the motherfucking Titanic. She was fascinating. The bitch was in rough shape. Bruises and dried blood patched all over her skin made her look like a puzzle missing some pieces. I'd stood there in the shadows, taking in the sight before me for such a long time that I almost missed the slight tilt of her body in a forward motion. If I was a nanosecond later in making a run for her, I'd be calling for a cleanup instead of sitting on top of her, caging her in with my thighs. Fuck. If she hadn't been such a tiny waif of a thing, she probably would have pulled me over with her.
"Why did you save me?"
she suddenly asked, pausing her adorable struggling, which was getting her nowhere fast.
"Aw, that's cute,"
I said, peering down into her doll-like eyes that were so dark they were almost black. She huffed. Her small, perky tits heaved up and down as she tried to catch her breath. So did her ribcage, which was outlined under her purple and yellowed skin. Her collarbone was sharp, and so were her elbows. She reminded me of one of those starving dog commercials with the sad music playing in the background.
"What's cute?"
she asked on a strained exhale.
"That you think you've been saved." "Well, I'm not dead," she argued.
"Yet," I shrugged. "It's hard to get answers from a flattened corpse. Trust me, I've tried." She growled and tried to free her arms from my grasp, and that's when I got a better look at the inside of her arms. Suddenly, it sunk in that this chick wasn't just covered in bruises. These were pockmarks. She wasn't just some skinny bitch. She was a junkie. Bruised. Broken. Vulnerable. She was shaking like a fucking leaf, and with every tremble, my dick grew harder until it was begging to be free of its khaki confines. She gasped when she felt me hard against her leg.
"What? Why?"
I raised my eyebrows. "Really? Why? My cock only knows that I'm on top of a naked chick. It's simple biology. Don't feel too flattered. I once got a chubby when a lady who runs the deli tried to wipe a mustard stain off the front of my pants." If she really knew that I was thinking about how her bruises and dried blood looked like art under the moonlight, and how I'd like to paint a line or two on her skin myself, she'd probably scream. Loud. I grew even harder. "What's your name?" I asked, easing up on my grip slightly.
"Why?"
she asked warily, her voice now a whisper. I rolled my eyes. "So I can know what to doodle on the cover of my notebook," I said sarcastically. "Okay, so here's how this is going to go. I'm going to let go of you and let you sit up. Then I'm going to introduce myself. And then you're going to introduce yourself. Got it?" She tipped her chin in agreement and never took her eyes off me, even when I let her go. She tried to sit up but was struggling, her muscles visibly shaking from the strain. At the rate she was going, I'd be next to throw myself off the tower from the pure boredom of waiting. She swatted at my chest when I picked her up by her hips and pulled her up to a sitting position, pressing her back against the wall. I grabbed her hands in mine. "No hitting," I said, shaking my index finger at her like I was scolding a toddler. I released her again and plopped down next to her. This chick was exhausting, but shit, I was kind of having fun. Junkies. Who knew? "I am Samuel Clearwater," I said, extending my hand. I didn't wait for her to take it. Instead, I picked up her hand off her thigh and shook it hard, as if to show her how introductions were done. My gaze dropped to the tiny patch of light-colored curls between her legs. My mouth watered. Huh. Dark hair on her head? Light body hair? Interesting little druggie. "But everyone calls me Preppy." I gave her delicate hand a hard squeeze. "And you are?"
"Andrea. But most people just call me Dre."
"Like Dr. Dre?" I asked, excited by her unique name. "That's fucking awesome. Please tell me you have a sibling named Snoop. For the love of all that is holy, please tell me that. Shit, never mind, don't tell me. I'm just going to pretend that you do." Her eyebrows squished together like she was trying to figure me out. Good fucking luck to her. She wouldn't be the first one.
So, Dr. Dre, you strung out?
I asked, already knowing the answer.
Fuck off, she spat, turning her head.
I grabbed her chin and forced her to face me.
I can fix that for you,
I sang. Her lips parted.
I can get you what you need to turn this little frown upside down.
I released her chin.
You just pointed out that I'm strung out, but you're offering me a fix?
Her pupils dilated, like the junkie part of her already knew the answer to my question.
Listen, I could take you to a 12-step meeting, or I could offer you an all-expense-paid trip to rehab. But if you haven't noticed, I'm not your parents, or Dr. fucking Phil, so that's not gonna happen. A life-changing solution, I ain't got.
But H?
H, I can get you with one little phone call.
She turned her head to the side.
So? What'll it be, Doc?
What do you want?
She asked, and that's when I knew she was considering my offer. Although there was more to it than that. Much, much more. Your buddies.
What are you going to do to them?
Does it fucking matter? I asked.
Let's just say that they aren't going to be offered an all-expense-paid trip to rehab either.
Tell me,
she begged, perking up and sitting straighter. She grabbed my arm and squeezed.
Please, just tell me the fucking truth.
If anything, I've always been overly honest, so the truth wasn't a problem for me. It poured easily from my lips, and Dre listened intently as I told her. I'm going to slit their throats, take my motherfucking plants back, call for someone to clean up the bodies so I don't get my khakis dirty, and probably come back up here and smoke a joint afterward. Maybe snort some blow if I feel like a party. Haven't really decided yet, depends on my mood.
She didn't respond right away. She seemed lost in thought, staring over the railing as she mindlessly reached up to her neck, pushing back her hair and exposing a fresh bruise-slash-welt combo in the shape of a large handprint. She ran her fingertips over it, and her eyes welled up with tears. I'd only followed her for Myrna's because she was a lot slower than those other two cunt buckets, and I thought she'd eventually lead me back to them. What I hadn't realized was that she wasn't just running from me. She was running from them, too.
I don't want the H,
she said, shocking the ever-loving shit out of me.
You're not a very good junkie,
I pointed out.
I'm not a junkie.
I am a junkie at the end of her rope, which until this very moment I didn't know were two different things, but they are a lot different.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that while you were circling the drain up there, I said, again pointing to the ledge.
She didn't look. Instead, she closed her eyes tightly and wrapped her arms around her stomach, like she couldn't stand to relive what she'd almost done.
And it's not that I don't want it, because I do want it. I want it so bad I can taste it, literally. Because when you shoot up, it leaves a taste in your mouth, and I just...
She said, reaching up to touch her lips.
But...
But?
But what's crazy is that I don't want it even more.
She exhaled a shaky breath.
I'll deal with my shit, but I was being honest when I said I wanted something else from you. Two things, actually.
You're not exactly in a position to be making demands, I reminded her. Although both me and my curious cock were very intrigued by what this tiny little person could possibly want from me.
No, I'm not,
she said, her voice filled with something that sounded a lot like newfound determination. She looked up, and when her eyes locked on mine, I swear it was like I could see her balls growing bigger with every word out of her mouth.
But I'll take my chances because life isn't always sunshine and whiskey.
Nope. More like dark storms and moonshine, I offered, laughing at my own joke. But if you're going to ask me to toss you off the tower, the answer is no, and not because I'm morally against it. I'm not actually morally against anything, but having morals, I just don't want you haunting one of my favorite places. However, I hear the causeway is excellent. Has mostly 5 stars on Yelp for best places in Logan's Beach to end it all. Tell me what you want, little junkie.
She looked up at me, obviously not amused by my hilarity as I was.
Just need you to tell me where the fuck Tweedledee and Tweedledum went, and anything within reason is yours. I pushed.
And you're going to kill them?
It wasn't a question. Yes. I'm going to make them Tweedle dead.